This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And
they want to see
me pick back up. And it's the X-Trace. We all are fighting. Now I got it like that. Tuck my napkin in. You know good and well that you don't want a problem like that. You gonna make someone around me catch up.
Place to Be Nation proudly presents Clotheslines and Headlines, your one-stop spot for the latest info, opinions, and news when it comes to the world of professional wrestling. This is episode number 18, folks. We are we're still here, regardless of what might be happening in the world. And who are we, you might ask? Well, I am one of your faithful hosts, the Godfather Nate Milton, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime, the sensational Steve Willey. How you doing this week, Steve?
Ah, I'm doing excellent, especially now that I have an alliterative nickname.
I figured you've earned your keep. You're going to be here for a while, so we might as well hook you up. Now, normally, the third voice you would hear on this mic would be Justin Rosero, but I don't know if you guys have been following the news lately, but there's a position open in D.C., and so Justin is up there applying for that job, and with his vast knowledge of Russians such as Vladimir Kozlov and Lana, I'm sure he'll get that job. But that's neither here nor there, because we have to introduce the third man of our crew filling in this week. He is the Jimmy Jam Garvin to our fabulous Freebirds. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up once again for the infamous Glenn Butler. Brother Glenn, how you feeling, my man?
Thank you so much for that introduction, Nate. I feel really special. I don't think we'll ever work in Washington, so I am safe to come on here with you guys whenever you need.
Right. Well, we've got a lot to talk about this week, folks. We've got our recap of WWE's Elimination Chamber. We've also got some Chikara to talk about this week, some ROH to get into. So we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get into maybe one of the more interesting stories this week in our headline segment. And it's funny, because on the day after Linda McMahon was confirmed as America's new small business administrator, deep breath, Glenn, we're going to kick off the show this week by looking at a big business. And no, I'm not talking about that great song by Swiss Beatz and Jadakiss and Ron Isley. I'm talking about the most recent WWE financial report. And to help us out with this subject is somebody who is well-versed in this field. He is a feature writer for Fightful.com covering the WWE's business. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Brandon Howard. Brother Brandon, thanks for joining us this week, my man.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Brandon, Just right off the bat, in terms of this report, what would you say was the big ticket item? What would you say would be the big takeaway for fans of the WWE in regards to how their business is currently doing?
I think when you look at WWE's business overall, it's despite what, me myself, we watch WWE TV and may not be very satisfied with it all the time, but it's a very strong business. It's really buoyed by TV rights fees. The huge TV rights fees that they get from partners like the USA Network and others around the world. But the most volatile part of it, and the most sort of unpredictable part of it, and the thing that really causes people to make guesses about what their stock price is going to do, is the WWE Network. And so what you see every year is you see the WWE Network subscribers, they spike on the day of or the day after WrestleMania. And then they lull going around that day. But for the most part, so far since the network launched in 2014, we see year over year growth in the network, which that's a big thing that they stress. Their CFO George Berrios, when he gives all the speeches and the talks and the conference call, he wants to stress that to investors that the network grows year over year, even though it spikes and then goes down around WrestleMania. Overall it's a strong business. They made $80 million in OIBDA, which is kind of a fancy word for profit. They expect to make $100 million in OIBDA next year, and that would be a record for them. coming off the call, I think one of the most interesting things that happened, though, was as far as like being a really accessible news story thing that people think about and talk about a lot, is Vince McMahon just went out of his way to volunteer the information that WrestleMania, you know, drew 101,000 people in Dallas. He said that, you know, that's actually not a that it's not a paid number that includes ushers and ticket takers and things like that. So I thought that was really interesting that he voluntarily opened up about that.
Yeah, that is something different. Instead of some sort of, you know, work number to actually give truthful information on a call, it's something we're not used to seeing so much from McMahon in the past.
Yeah, and if you look at they put out this document quarterly called their Key Performance Indicators, which is sort of a more visual document where you see a bunch of graphs and things like that, where they go over various metrics related to their business. And one of the things that's in there is a quarterly view of their live event attendance. And for WrestleMania, because the WrestleMania attendance every year is so high, they break that out. So to make a long story short, people like me and Chris Harrington, who study WWE business closely, were able to break that number out and basically calculate within a range what the paid attendance for WrestleMania actually was. So we knew it was somewhere between something like 49,000 and 85,000, something like that. So we knew that it wasn't a paid number just based on that. But that's something that's sort of buried in financial documents.
Well, you know, looking at some of the numbers, and I have to say, Brandon, I really enjoyed your article on FightfulWrestling.com because, you know, generally you see wrestling news, it is just kind of a regurgitation, and it is very clear that you put research in and you
Thank you.
Put a lot of effort into expanding upon what the numbers are. So one thing that I really noticed in your look at the numbers is while the network is definitely improving and there's a lot of money coming in terms of a revenue and profit per year, if you're looking at the overall history of the network, this is still something technically that's running at a loss.
It's running at a loss when you compare it to the old pay-per-view model.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think so. The thing that everybody was talking about when they announced that they were going to launch the network is that, well, is this going to be a better way to go than pay-per-view, in terms of making profits? And I think it's not yet. I mean, we have to make a lot of hypothetical guesses about
Sure.
well how many buys would they really still be getting? And I did a long article a couple months ago, I think, about. I tried to use Google search data to predict if we were still in the pay-per-view only era, how many buys would these pay-per-views that we're watching would they be getting, and the numbers that I got tell you that pay-per-view would still be doing, you know, pretty strong. It would be doing at least comparable to previous years just before they went to the network. So when you consider that pay-per-view would still be pretty strong, and when you consider the cannibalization of things like iPay-per-view, you used to be able to go on W.com and order a pay-per-view at the full, whatever it was, $45, $55 price. So that's totally done away with because of the network. You consider the cannibalization from DVD sales, which must be hurt by, you know, why would anybody buy a DVD of the recent pay-per-view when you can just get it all on the network? So mm-hmm. things like that. And then on top of that, in 2014, they renegotiated all of their TV or their main TV rights deals. And that was at the same time, that was just after the network had launched. And Vince McMahon admitted himself on a conference call that, you know, they were kind of disappointed with the TV rights deal, although the TV rights deal, the TV rights fees are the biggest revenue stream for them. Their deal that they'd made in 2014 was hurt. It would have been higher without the WWE network being there. This Vince McMahon said it himself. So that's an undetermined amount of money that, you know, we don't know how much. Who knows what the deal would have been other than, you know, the people who are at the bargaining table there. So as the point is, when you consider all these things that they've cannibalized, the network, when I do the calculations, the network, I think, is down as a business opportunity, as a business venture, is they're about $30 to $70 million in the hole still. I think if you're generous, you could say, well, the network is a few million per year more profitable than the network. Or if you're less generous, you could say that it's still not making as much money as pay-per-view only would.
Mm. Now, Brandon, you talk about the WWE cannibalizing their own business. One of the things that has always troubled me about the network, and you know, I've got the network. I watch it on a regular basis. But one of the things that's always troubled me is the way it kind of cannibalizes everyone else's business. You know, when you talk about whether it's a Flow Slam or whether it's a New Japan World, you know, or some of these other systems out there that these independent companies are trying to put together, when you've got the industry leader who has set the standard rate at $9.99, do you feel that that's something that's hurt the business in general, and that the WWE has kind of undersold themselves coming out of the gate?
That's a good question. I think it does hurt people like Flow Slam in terms of it's hard to sell to a pro wrestling fan, hey, you're going to pay $20 a month, or if you buy the year, it comes out to $12.50 per month. But yeah, you're going to pay $20 a month, you know, double what you pay for the WWE Network for, and what you're going to end up paying for is something that's not as major league and doesn't have as high production values as WWE. So I do think it hinders people like Flow Slam. With New Japan World, it's actually cheaper than $9.99. Comes out to, if you buy it, you know, if you buy it as an American, you're paying something like $8 and change for 999 yen. But yeah, I think it does hurt people like Flow Slam. And what was your other question?
Do you think that the WWE kind of undersold themselves? Because I would think that maybe that, you know, they could have come out of the gate with various tiers, you know, instead of the flat rate of $9.99, maybe, you know, kind of, you know, having a $20 range and then a $15 range, maybe a $8 range instead of $9.99, which I think, you know, doesn't really like it, and especially now that you don't even have to sign up for a full year or 6 months. Like to me, it's like, man, I think for a company this big honestly, I'm not trying to put extra money in Vince McMahon's pocket. I'm not about that business. Yeah. But I think, you know, they could have charged more and gotten away with it.
Yeah, definitely. I think part of the reason why they went with $9.99 right away is because they wanted to launch this thing with a low price that really caught people's attention. And I think certainly in 2014, if not still today, I think you still have people who were and maybe still are hesitant about using this OTT technology. You know, like in 2014, most people didn't have OTT capable smart TVs or didn't have OTT devices like Apple TVs or maybe the game consoles that have OTT capability. So you had to get people to accept this new technology, whereas maybe they didn't have a device that was capable of it before. They've done surveys that they put out to their fan council where they're obviously thinking about it, and they're trying to see, you know, maybe what would be the best strategy. I know several months ago they did a survey where they asked about, you know, would you be interested in tiers that would include things like independent wrestling content?
Sure.
And like other things like you would get a vote in the WWE Hall of Fame or something like that. You know, but I think $9.99 probably within the next few years will not be at least the only price point. I know when those surveys come out, I was kind of thinking maybe around WrestleMania, maybe they'll try to launch multiple tiers. You never know. I think they were also looking at doing like maybe in a less than $9.99 tier or something like that, where you would get access to like the free content on the network, and you'd have to watch more commercials and things like that. But these are, you know, who knows? These are just things that they're testing out, you know.
What do you make of the strategy that they have of offering the first month of the network free? Is there extensive information on how many people get hooked and become paying customers after that versus how many people kind of come in for their free month and watch a pay-per-view or two, say, and then leave?
Yes, yeah, so we don't really know. We know that there are a certain number of free subscribers whenever they do the report. So they put out the report quarterly. So at the end of every 3 months, they say, here's the number of paid, here's the number of free, and here's the number of subscribers on an average daily basis throughout the quarter. So we know how many free subscribers there are. I think at the end of the last quarter, there's something like 40,000 free subscribers, something like that. But they don't know. I'm sure they know, but we don't know how many free subscribers actually convert. We don't have any sense of the trail from being a free subscriber to becoming a paid subscriber. And you'll have like analysts on the conference call sometimes will ask, you know, can you give us an impression of like, so they, you know, they did the free WrestleMania campaign where they actually like let people sign up for free and watch WrestleMania, like their most valuable piece of content. and you'd have analysts ask questions like, you know, can you give us an idea of how many people who signed up during the free WrestleMania campaign actually converted? And they won't give what George Berrios calls granularity on lots of things like that. You know, it's like, despite being a publicly traded company, they don't have to let us in on everything, you know, unfortunately.
Mm. Well, let's kind of bring this back to what we were kind of alluding to earlier, Brandon, and it's something that Glenn and I talked about on the last episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. And I think the debate, Glenn, was, as debates tend to be on pro wrestling shows, the debate was about Roman Reigns. And I think we ended up in the place where, yes, we would like something different, but with the business that they're doing, what's the incentive for them to change? And so I'm wondering, Brandon, with these financial reports and kind of seeing that the business is in a good place right now, what incentive do they have to listen to the fans? And obviously you don't want to listen to every single fan, but if there's a dedicated part of your consumer base that has legitimate concerns, what incentive is there for this industry leader to actually listen to them and perhaps make changes?
In a way that would be meaningful to people like us, there's no incentive for them to change, to do anything differently than what they're doing. You know, I think Vince McMahon is a pretty insulated guy, at least when it comes to creative, and he doesn't, you know, I think there are a lot of ready-made excuses for the phenomena that we see, where like things like Roman Reigns getting booed, or you know, somebody not getting over like they expected to. It's you know, it's a heel town, or it's, you know, as long as all the people are, you know, making some noise, you know. I think they have a lot of, they're very insulated, and they have a lot of, you know, almost delusions and you know, ready-made excuses that justify everything that they do creatively. But I, you know, so I've considered stuff about Roman Reigns. I think there are people like who will, you know, they'll ask sometimes, be like, so is Roman Reigns a draw or not? I've looked at house show attendance quite a bit, and what you see over the last several years is that there's no denying John Cena is a house show draw. Mm-hmm. You know, even in this era where, like, you know, everybody says WWE's brand is the draw, and nobody is a draw as an individual. You look at house show attendance, you look at house shows with John Cena in a given market, and you look at house shows without John Cena in that same market, and it's up like somewhere between like 15% and 25%. And that's over the course of several years. So I don't think there's any denying that, you know, John Cena is a legit draw. So to go back to Reigns, when you look at, like, you know, you look at Reigns' track record over the last couple of years, you don't see as much of a clear distinction. I can't tell you with any reliable sense that, like, Roman Reigns is a positive or negative draw. You know, it's like John Cena makes a difference and nobody else makes an identifiable difference, plus or minus. But a few weeks ago, I did look at, I did an article on Google shopping results. So it's like, if you go to Google, you know, you can type in any word, but you can also hit that tab that says shopping, and you can, you know, search for any piece of merchandise in the world, right? And so Google Trends, they do this thing where you can put in, you know, any word or any person's name or any company's name you can imagine, and you can get an idea of the Google searches, but you can also get an idea of, you know, how many Google shopping searches there were. So I went to the trouble of basically putting in every WWE superstar of note in there and extracting all that data into an Excel spreadsheet to get an idea of, in 2016, you know, who was generating the most Google shopping searches, with the hope that this would give us, you know, some suggestion about who's a strong merchandise draw. Because at least with merchandise, you know, you can say about house show or a pay-per-view, well, there's all these matches and there's all these stars, so who's to say who the draw really was? But when it comes to merchandise, I mean, merchandise is about a wrestler, you know? So when I looked at that, I found that John Cena is by far the number one guy. Roman Reigns is by far the number two guy. And then below that is kind of everybody else. And surprisingly, AJ Styles is already the number three guy, despite only being in the company for 1 year. And, wow. And again, this is just suggestive. This is just Google search shopping results. So this is not like, I'm not going into the WWE's, you know, internal records here, but the differences between Cena and Reigns and everybody else are, I think, are so wide that I do believe that that's the case, that it's clear number one for Cena, it's a clear number two for Reigns, and then everybody else is just kind of mixed in.
Well, Brandon, we really thank you for taking time out of your day and your evening to come on with us and explain in more detail than most lay people are going to understand about the numbers, you know, the info behind the numbers. And before you go, you know, we, like I said before, we like to lift up some the positive work that's out there in the world of wrestling writing. You know, anything that you wanted to plug inside or outside of the world of wrestling?
Yeah, just check out Fightful.com. That's where I write stuff. If you want to read the stuff that I've written, if you go to Fightful.com, there's a features button at the top in the menu there, and you can find Brandon Howard, and you can click on that. You see all the things that I've written in chronological order for the website. But if you check out Fightful.com, it's a website that covers pro wrestling as well as MMA and boxing. They've got lots of podcasts with people like Matt Riddle. And they've got they've got wrestlers like Jason Kincaid writing for them. They've got MMA podcasts with actual UFC fighters. Hurricane Shane Helms does a podcast with Fightful now as well. They do post Raw and SmackDown shows, like podcasts, as well as post PPV podcasts. So, and this is stuff you can watch on YouTube and actually see Sean Ross Sapp, who's the host and managing editor. You actually see him talking with people and stuff like that. So, I think it's a really great site. You should check it out. And that's where I do all my stuff.
Well, very good. Well, again, Brennan, thank you very much for joining us, and we'd love to have you back on maybe next quarter when the next numbers come out, and we can break down some of the pre-WrestleMania stuff and see if there's been any change.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, and we'll be right back. We will be talking a little bit more WWE, but this time outside of the boardroom, inside of the ring, a little bit of an Elimination Chamber talk. Place to be Nation, close eyes and headlines. We'll be right back.
Yo, I'm dealing with this mommy from Quebec. When she fly in, I pull a boat out and we blow Scammy on the deck. Shooting at the stars, she time me in the tech. Come on, soon as the Dutch finish, you can find me on the neck. Yeah, no foreplay, busting the pound crazy. Middle of the ocean, busting her down crazy.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole
Welcome back to Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines. Now we are going to talk some WWE in the A block. We talked about the business of the company, but now let's talk about the most recent network special, pay-per-view, whatever you want to call it, in this WWE network era. And that was, of course, the Elimination Chamber, a SmackDown-only event that took place at the Talking Stick Arena, formerly the American Airlines Arena out there in Phoenix, Arizona. And there was a lot on this card, folks. Maybe not a lot of intrigue, but there's certainly a lot of bodies. As we were talking during the break, guys, just the amount of competitors on this card, and I think half of them were in that damn tag match. So let's kind of go through the card and give our thoughts on what went down and just kind of chop it up. So we had, let's see, 8 matches, if you want to count the pre-show match, and I always count the pre-show match. Somebody's got to pay Sam Roberts' check.
Oh, God, yeah, I got freaking Art Garfunkel back on the show.
good on him, though. I mean, the guy's worked pretty hard over the years.
Yeah, I'm not mad at Sam Roberts. Keep getting them checks, man.
Yeah, he's basically like one of us showing up on maybe like a Ring of Honor or something like that.
I don't think they can afford Glenn Butler.
I don't come cheap, baby.
They need you, though. No. We can talk about that in our next show.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Yep. But we had Mojo Rawley and Curt Hawkins in the Who Cares match. Mojo won because he was hype. Becky Lynch beat the returning Mickie James. Kalisto and Apollo Crews defeated Dolph Ziggler in a backwardly booked handicap match. We had the tag team turmoil match where it was a lot of bodies, but long story short, American Alpha retained their titles. We had Nikki Bella and Natalya, which ended in a double countout. Randy Orton defeated Luke Harper in a singles match. We had Naomi defeating Alexa Bliss to win the SmackDown's Women's Championship. And in the main event, in the Elimination Chamber match for the WWE Championship, Bray Wyatt, Erwin R. Scheister's baby boy, defeated John Cena, AJ Styles, The Miz, Dean Ambrose, and the Lone Wolf, Baron Corbin, to win his first WWE Championship. So a lot going on with this card, fellas. First of all, I guess, Steve, what was your overall impression of the show?
I had gone into the show thinking it was going to be a one-match pay-per-view. And I do like your the network era. I think you coined a term there. Instead of the reality era, the WWE network era. I like it. But yeah, I thought it was a one-match show, and I was a little bit surprised. I'm on record as being a big Luke Harper fan, and you know that brought the match with Orton brought a little bit more than I thought it was going to. And I've been also pleasantly surprised by the Nikki Bella and Natalya feud. It might be the first time I've ever said I'm impressed with something about Nikki Bella in as a terms of wrestling, but it's a feud that maybe some people think it's going on a little too long, but not me. I actually kind of enjoy it. We've always complained in the past, we as a wrestling fan group, about there's only women's matches for the title. There's nothing else going on. There's no other feuds. Well, here's a long-term feud that's got a little juice to it that goes on pay-per-view, SmackDown, and you're talking Smack Show. So, hey, got to show the love when they're doing what we're asking for.
Yeah, what about you, Glenn? I was gonna say you taking a little time right there. You feeling the glow?
Oh, you know I'm feeling the glow, man. That came to me as a complete surprise. I mean, obviously the story they were telling was about Alexa Bliss kind of overlooking Naomi and looking toward WrestleMania to come in as champion, and I was doing the exact same thing. I did not think Naomi had a chance in hell of winning this match, and I think it's a great reward for her for really putting in a lot of effort and getting better as she has recently. And I think they had a hell of a match.
Yeah.
The one thing you can bang on a little bit is Naomi's split-legged moonsault needs a little work.
It's very hit or miss. Like sometimes like she'll get it perfectly, but as we saw in that match at the finish, like sometimes the time is a little off.
Yeah, and having two of them right in a row at the end of the match kind of brought it down a little bit, but Naomi's post-match promo I thought was really good at selling the angle of a face finally winning the title, as opposed to Alexa Bliss when she won the title as a heel finally winning the title after coming up from NXT, kind of taking it in a different direction. Regardless of what you think about the "you deserve it" chant, whether that's a little self-serving from the audience, but it obviously meant a lot to her, and as a performer and as the character on TV, so it was just nice to see.
Yeah, I really dug that match, and to your point, Steve, this is a show where not only did we have Naomi and Alexa Bliss, not only did we have Natalya and Nikki, but we had Mickie James and Becky Lynch, like three very distinct stories told in the women's division. And when's the last time we got that?
Never. Right? Like three matches on the main card, almost 50% of the show in terms of match number were women's matches that weren't just thrown together.
And all of which delivered in different ways, too. You know, Nikki and Natalya were kind of bringing the hate, commensurate with the feud that they've been having. Becky Lynch and Mickie James were exchanging strikes like hell. Oh, some of that was rough. And then there was the big underdog story for the title match. So it's three very different feuds at the same time.
I thought you were talking about the underdog match with Carmella and James Ellsworth.
Yeah, that too.
That is crazy, though, because, like, in a time not so far away, Steve, like you alluded to, man, the best we could have hoped for was maybe a title match and then either a ridiculous match that was just thrown together at the last minute, or our only other women's contribution would have been those stupid Carmella James Ellsworth segments.
Right. And even just a couple of years back, you know, before Charlotte and Sasha and Becky were called up, you know, you'd probably have like a just throw everybody in the roster in a multi-person match, faces and heels, you know, be damned, just put them together in any kind of combination and have a 3-minute match with all those people. So, and you wouldn't even see this on Raw, to be honest.
Nope, because they don't have the depth in the women's division. As we saw this past week on Raw, like they're very top heavy. And again, I'm not making a joke about the physical appearances of these women. But after Sasha, Charlotte, and Bayley, and to some extent my future ex-wife, Nia Jax, what do you got? Like, you got Emma, who we don't know what the hell she's doing, and you got Dana Brooke, who is a non-factor at this point, and what else? So, you know, the SmackDown women, even though they might not be as technically quote-unquote good in the ring as the top end of the Raw women, the depth is certainly there, and the blue brand has it.
I follow a couple of accounts on Twitter that often talk about the proportion of the runtime of these shows that the women's division is given. And for Raw, a 3-hour show every week, often there's like 3% of the show is a women's match. And otherwise there are, you know, there's maybe a promo or a couple of segments or something. And even on SmackDown sometimes. This show, I don't remember the exact percentage. I think it was around like 20. Which still isn't quite parody, but it's a lot better than they usually do.
And it's exponential. The growth has been exponential. It wasn't a slow build towards that. It was a big jump.
Harsh.
Man.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, I love you, Sigmund. Yeah, since the brand split, it's been a big jump. And, you know, we're talking off air a little bit about the, you know, the supposed lack of depth on the roster for SmackDown. They threw everybody up there, and so they put all the women on the roster on the show, on the main show, and you gotta commend that.
And maybe in a show of the limits of their attention span a little bit, Nate, you mentioned that, you know, normally in past times they might just throw all the women in one match, like a gauntlet match, say, or a turmoil match, say. And this time it's the entire tag team division that kind of gets slam jammed together.
And to me, man, like, you know, going back to that Naomi match real quick for the title, it was something that surprised me, Glenn, because I thought that she might win it at WrestleMania, you know, in her hometown, but I did not imagine at all that Alexa Bliss was going to lose the title. And so now, you know, obviously they're working this injury storyline, but I think it'd just be really cool for her to be able to do that entrance in her hometown and come to the ring with the title. Even if she loses, it'd still be a great moment for those fans there.
Yeah, I thought for sure that Becky Lynch would be beating Alexa again at WrestleMania if they did a SmackDown women's title match. But I will be very happy to see Naomi defend, hopefully. Because imagine her entrance on a WrestleMania scale. I mean, just imagine the sort of tableau they'll have for that. And it'll have to be pretty late in the show because it'll have to be dark.
Oh, indeed. One thing I wanted to talk about in terms of the main event, in terms of the actual Elimination Chamber match, the one thing I noticed with that and then the switch on, you know, as they moved on to SmackDown, and they've really been focusing more on the Wyatt family storyline. And I thought that this was the first time since the not bland split, the brand split, that it's been a shift from AJ, Dean, and to when he's there, Cena. that has been the major focus of the top of the card. And that has switched very quickly.
I think so. And this is obviously, to me, the most compelling Bray Wyatt's been in a long time. And I think they've got some really cool moving parts here with Luke Harper, who I haven't always been a fan of, but the dude's definitely been improving. With Randy Orton, you know, we're always waiting for that switch. When's that breakup going to come? And it's got to come soon as we're on this road to WrestleMania. And then, you know, you mentioned AJ, who still, Cena be damned, is getting the biggest babyface reactions on SmackDown, if not in the company.
And Cena's starting to not care about being the number one face anymore, which I kind of like to see. You know, everyone's asking for a heel turn for 5, 6, 7 years. You know, he's a heel. A lot of times he is a heel, and he will lay it up to the crowd and even insult the crowd if need be.
Yeah, he's definitely kind of towing that line a little more, while Styles is, like, acting heelish and the most beloved on the show, almost.
Stop cheering me.
Yeah, seriously.
But you know, getting back to Bray Wyatt, though, guys, I actually like this move. And obviously, I think we all think he's going to be a transitional champion. But who knows, man, if this thing catches on and the crowd keeps responding to him in this top spot, who knows what kind of run he could have. So what are your thoughts early on of the Bray Wyatt championship reign, Brother Glenn?
You know, it's a little strange for me because the Chamber match I thought was very good. And even Wyatt was good in it. I'm not typically a Bray Wyatt fan in the ring. I think his promo's good, his character is good, but his matches are often disappointing. Orton, as well, has been disappointing to me often in the ring in the past, to put it lightly. And so, kind of putting them on the collision course for WrestleMania is not the best that I could have hoped for. But this Chamber match was really good, and Wyatt beating Styles and Cena back-to-back puts him over about as well as he could be at this point. Now, he is a guy who, it has been variously observed, has lost pretty much all of his feuds and a lot of his matches, including a bunch to Cena, for instance. And it seems sometimes like the only guy he got to beat was Dean Ambrose, and that was just the exploding TV.
He owns Daniel Bryan.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe he'll start feuding with him after The Miz stops. But And yet, you know, putting him over the way they did here, over Styles and Cena back-to-back, really was as solid a push as he could possibly get at this point. And I think from the reaction he got, that kind of paid off.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, when you talk about maybe not being so hot for the match at WrestleMania, I think it'll be good for two reasons. Number one, I think while the in-ring might not be top-notch, the storytelling thus far has been interesting. And I think if they can continue with some compelling storytelling, the fans will be there for that match. But the other thing, Steve, is it's not going to be the top match at WrestleMania. It might not even be one of the top three matches at WrestleMania, given how we think the card is shaping up right now. So there will be less scrutiny and less pressure on this title match, I think.
Yeah, that's a little nitpick I have. This is more about me than it is the actual product. I love the Royal Rumble. It's my favorite event of the year. And still they claim that you're in the main event at WrestleMania if you win the match. And they even showed it on the screen during the prelims for the Royal Rumble, like as they were doing it in the announcement and talking about the rules. This is not going to be the main event. You know, you could either do a Universal title match. You know, it could be Triple H Rollins if that happens. Likely Goldberg Lesnar is what it's going to be, but really, this could be the first match for all we know, the first on the show.
Yeah,
outside of the pre-show, that will probably last 3.5 hours.
I'm not sure last year's is over yet.
Hey, we got to make room for Shaquille O'Neal and the Big Show.
Yeah, you know, Julian, you mentioned about Bray's character work, which has always been, you know, fairly stellar. The one favorite part I had of that match actually happened before the bell rang, as Bray came to the ring and kind of stalked around the chamber and stopped at each pod and gave the person inside, whether it was the Miz, whether it was Baron Corbin, just kind of stared him down a little bit. And I like that little bit of showing his character. Like, he doesn't care if you're a heel. He doesn't care if you're a face. You know, he's about his cult, and that's only, you know, no fear type thing.
Yeah, that was definitely a great note, because Bray Wyatt is obviously a character who lives and dies on the mind games that he plays against his opponents. And so that little bit of psyching out, especially when so many people are trapped in the pods, was really a nice note. We really ought to mention, while we're on the Elimination Chamber match, what, Nate, what do you think of the new chamber?
I like it. I think that it allows them to do more in the chamber, because, you know, I've gone back and watched some of the older chamber matches, and particularly when you got guys that want to do high-flying moves, the chamber can kind of get in the way. So I think this this newly redesigned Elimination Chamber benefits, you know, the modern work rate of these guys.
And also the safety part of it, too. I first looked at it, I was like, oh, man, they're really taking away some of the scary parts of the chamber. Because, you know, when they first introduced it, it was the sheer fact that it was a monstrosity. They would show, like, the video of the graphics of them making it and, like, the blueprints of it and Bischoff, because, you know, its storyline, it was his creation, just how devastating the structure would be. And then now you got, I think more like a gymnastics mat, like you would have in gym class, around the ring. So my first look was like, oh man, this looks very safe. Are they going to have helmets on when they come to the ring too? But then, you know, you think about it and you think, like you said, Nate, at some of the older matches, not just the high flying, but the ability to walk outside of the ring, you know, it's like going across a playground equipment at an elementary school where kids kind of fall through some of the suspension bridges because they can't keep their footing. And that's happened more than once where you see guys getting tripped up. And I can't imagine, you know, we were joking with Brandon in the first segment about taking bumps. I can't imagine getting slammed on a chain with a bunch of holes in it. That's not going to protect you as much as a mat or a ring or even a bunch of plywood for that matter.
Yeah, more than once in previous chamber matches, you saw someone body slammed on the kind of grill outside the ring and come up with their back cut in the shape of the grid. So I get that part. I thought the new chamber felt a little too produced. And, I mean, I can't begrudge them making it safer, obviously. Putting the flat top grill on top of the pods so that you don't get something like Kalisto in the tag team chamber getting his foot stuck in the chains.
Yeah, I felt so bad for him in that match.
Yeah, definitely. And putting kind of the mats over the grid outside the ring so you don't, like I said, get guys getting their backs cut. You know, I understand all that for safety reasons. And even presentation reasons, the kind of light strips on the sides of the pods and the big WWE logo cut in steel at the center of the top of the thing. So you see it on that Wile E. Coyote camera when they're choosing the next person. I understand all that for presentation reasons and for safety reasons, but it still feels, I think, a little produced. I'll probably just have to get used to it. I mean, probably everyone who has those objections will, you know, get used to it over time.
Yeah, Steve. Glenn, you know, I'm sure you wanted Tom Brady out there last week or a couple weeks ago playing in a leather helmet, man. You got to update.
Well,
update with the times, man.
Oh, I'm spiteful, but not quite that spiteful.
Wasn't that a movie George Clooney made? Like, was it Leathernecks or
Leathernecks,
something?
Leathernecks,
yep.
Yeah. I never saw that. But what I did see...
No, Nate, everything was better in the past, Nate.
Yes, that's what I've been told. So I'm not going to go any further because I don't want to get in trouble with some higher-ups in this nation.
Okay.
Real quick, you know, we talked about the women's matches. We talked about the Elimination Chamber match in the main event. Were there any other matches that really stood out to you? I know, Steve, you mentioned Orton and... Luke Harper. Was that your favorite match other than what we've already discussed?
It was because, as I mentioned before, I have been a big Harper fan because I did see him like on the indies, like when, you know, kind of Chikara and Dragon Gate, where he was a monster among little guys. Mm. And to see him, like, just it was a different world for him. Like, he was a monster compared to a lot of the other guys. And even when they brought, you know, the Y family up to the main roster and they had that great feud with the Shield, you know, they were presented, you know, Bray was the leader, but Rowan and Harper were presented as monsters. And part of it was, you know, due to various injuries. And, you know, part of it was just due to, you know, the way they booked him, especially, I mean, speaking of getting booked bad, you know, where's Eric Rowan right now? Mm. And, but, like, his potential far outweighed what they were doing with him. And so to put him in a higher position, and this is one of the big benefits of a brand split. You know, if this was one roster, you probably wouldn't be seeing him in this position. But just to give him a chance and throw him in one-on-one with Orton, who's, you know, say what you will about him. He's a seasoned vet. He's a big guy up in the card. He's a fan favorite, whether he's, you know, playing good or bad. To give him that chance, and I think he came through. It was a hard-hitting affair. He even got the "This is awesome" chant, which is the second most overdone besides "You deserve it." and you know, in this, you know, it was like third from the top, I think, next to the women's championship match. Yep. And possibly giving him a big shot at a WrestleMania match. Mm. That's not like a six man, like high up the card for him. Yeah, we said the match isn't going to be the main event, but to be placed in the potential to be in a three-way match or you know, have something to do with a main title match at WrestleMania, it's a pretty big deal from where he's come from.
Well, real quick, Steve, I don't want to steal Breeze and Fandango's gimmick and be the fashion police here, but if he's going to have, you know, this singles run apart from the Wyatt family, do you think he's got to change up the look? Because he's still – like, it's not a – and I don't want to, you know, stereotype here, a profile, but it's just not a main event look in my opinion.
No, I actually completely agree with you there. And I don't know – this is going to be where you're going to have a good creative – team, because I really don't even know what to do with that. You know, he's had the same thing since at least 2010. It might even be the same undershirt for all we know.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he's going to change his look, I think just about the only thing he could do is finally wash that shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, there was it last year or the year before at WrestleMania when he got the vest with all of his opponents' names on it?
Mm-hmm. Didn't he have like a nice, it was almost like a nice trucker shirt type deal, like only in best format.
Yeah.
It looked a little nicer.
A little bit. Whatever they do with his look really depends on whether they're going to change his character. And I'm not sure how much they really could change his character and still kind of capture what they have in him. You know, it's weird. I mean, Harper's role for a long time has been to have better matches with Bray Wyatt's opponents than Bray Wyatt's going to.
Excellent point. Yep.
And to lose all of them. I mean, you think the guy's ever going to win an important match?
Oh, man. I keep saying, though, there's a gimmick out there for the right guy that might need to be revamped for a new millennium. And you know, who knows? Maybe all we got to do is slick back Luke Harper's hair, put it in a ponytail, give him a nice Armani suit, and he can claim the mantle of the modern-day man, Terry Taylor. Or, excuse me, Terrence Taylor.
Lucas Harper, you mean?
Lucas Harper. He can be the computerized man of the millennium. Just walk around using Snapchat and Twitter and tout.
No, just yeah, just bring back Marlena and her role as Miss York, and bring the same computer for all. That makes it even better.
Oh, that'd be great.
The 1980s computerized man.
Just coming out with big spreadsheets. This is how you can beat. This is how you can beat Apollo Crews.
Did we ever settle whether you have to have a camera to use Tout, or is it part of the software?
Oh my gosh, that is a a throwback of old Place to Be Nation.
Tout. One of the WWE's
finest moments.
Finest moments, along with the World Bodybuilding Federation and the XFL.
I'm looking forward to the 30-on-30 tout.
For tout? It'll be 30 seconds. Yeah. 30 seconds for 30 seconds. Oh, but on that note, that was all things Blue Brand. We stuck to SmackDown this week, coming off of the Elimination Chamber and the big title changes, both with Bray Wyatt and more importantly, at least to me, Naomi, because I've been feeling the glow all week, guys. So I'm hoping we can keep this good feeling going, because coming up next, we're going to talk Ring of Honor. So don't you guys and girls go anywhere. Stick and stay. We've got more of Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines right after this.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We are back, episode 18. Some consternation over which number it was, but you know, like most kindergartners, we can make it to 20. I don't know where we're going after that. We are back to talk with the Grand Poombaa, the head of the Place to Be Nation. We're going to call him Brad, all capital letters, one word, because you know we're going to talk Ring of Honor and we're going to talk Japanese wrestling, and that's what they do with the names around there. We'll give you some capital letters. Brad, how are you doing?
Steve, I'm doing great, and I really like that idea that I'm going to go with a moniker that models like Kushida.
Yeah.
So I'm in.
There you go. And it's an easy way for you to sign off on the checks from now on.
That is true.
Capital letter B-R-A-D. Well, this is, I'd have to say, an interesting time to be talking about Ring of Honor, because there's a lot of changes, there's a lot of flux, and some of it we know, some of it we don't know, some of speculation, and that's from both on-screen, off-screen, kind of an interesting time. We had a good break from Final Battle, and now it's starting to pick back up again with a couple shows in Columbus, a TV taping in Pittsburgh, and a few shows coming up, a few big shows coming up that we'll talk about. But first, you know, something we have to talk about is our good friend Kevin Kelly, you know, longtime contributor, some rumors, and not just rumors, but stepping away from his full-time job with Ring of Honor that he, you know, talked about on our show earlier in the Clotheslines and Headlines history when he took that job. Mm-hmm. So step back from it. We're kind of uncertain where things are right now. There's some talk that he's going to stick around to do TV, stick around to do maybe some other live events when he's not in Japan doing stuff for New Japan as his expanded role out there with commentating. Brad, well, you know, what can you tell us about this right now?
Yeah, I think you covered it pretty well. So right now, I mean, Kevin is – New Japan expanded their English commentary opportunities, and they hired Don Callis to do color commentary with Kevin, with Steve Corino, also related to Place to Be Nation, moving on to the WWE. So, you know, I love that announcing pair myself because I've always been a Don Callis guy. I'm sure everybody remembers the ECW show we did with Todd Sinclair and Ben Morse, and I was the only guy that liked Don Callis on commentary. And, you know, Don, he has a podcast too, and, you know, he's got his own shtick, but he actually I thought he did a really great job in the New Beginning shows. He was very toned down, but he was very deliberate with that, and then, you know, still kind of worked in his stuff, but it was really an enjoyable listen. So they're expanding their English commentary, and of course we know that they're going to be running some shows in the U.S. later this year, so Kevin has, you know, quite a few obligations there. And then, you know, he was in Japan for the last week or so doing the two New Beginning shows and the one house show in between there. So yeah, we're gonna have him on in a couple weeks, mm-hmm. on Clotheslines and Headlines, and the hope is to be able to shed some light there on what's next for him. If you do want to petition for the Kevin Kelly show to come back, you can tweet Kevin at Real Kevin Kelly. Be sure to tag in Place to Be Nation or whoever else. And actually, you know, I'm going to try to get his show on Don Callis' radar. Don is, you know, very friendly with Kevin from their time back in the WWF. So I think it would be something that, you know, maybe he can kind of give him that urge to. So maybe we'll have the Kevin Kelly show coming back. But, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back. You know, Kevin had, you know, take a step back, kind of look at what he's doing there in the office and all the other engagements there, and yeah, and figure out what's right for him. So hopefully we'll hear something in a couple weeks. But he was great over in Japan. Something I think, you know, each show better and better. So that's New Japan is rising, whereas, you know, Ring of Honor, maybe Steve right now is kind of a little bit slow out of the gate in 2017.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're sinking. They're kind of some treading water right now, I'd say. And, you know, Kevin's had some changes in his life, and the ROH roster has gone through some changes, as in this world of WWE kind of picking guys off here and there from the indies, there's quite a state of flux in terms of rosters, not just with Ring of Honor, but a lot of the other indies across the world now. And so we have seen those changes in Ring of Honor. You know, we've talked before about Kyle O'Reilly not really knowing where he's going to end up, and the kind of quickly leaving the company and not really showing up on anyone's radar yet. We had, since the last time we've talked, we've had Keith Lee kind of make a surprise exit and sign with WWN to do some Evolve shows. Actually did, I believe, the last match with Chris Hero before he got signed with the WWE.
Second to last match.
Second to last one, yeah, right. And Donovan Dijak recently had a title match and then kind of left the promotion as well. I'm trying to think of any other guys off the top of my head. But there's also been an influx of talent too.
Sure, and so they, you know, they had a lot of buzz come out of Final Battle Weekend, and you know, we had a preview here where Kevin was on to talk about Wrestle Kingdom, and there was a lot of you know, interest in what was going to happen with Kyle O'Reilly, and I think a lot of people thought that surely he would stick around. They put the belt on him, and you know, he you know, they gave him another offer. He didn't take it. He since did an interview with Rolling Stone where he alluded to that, you know, they came to him kind of late in the process. If they came to him earlier, he would have probably signed it. I don't know if that's, you know, revisionist history on his side, or sure, a little slam back at whomever in the office there. But yeah, so they had these two shows and a lot of buzz, and then really outside of one TV taping in Atlanta, really didn't do anything until the very beginning of February. So all it was kind of sitting back and watching people in contract situations or working without a deal. you know, like Donovan Dijak's contract a bit up and he was working just dates. So he could leave whenever. And so, you know, he did his last show and he had a nice note that he sent off. He was in Ring of Honor for 2+ years and thanked them for the opportunity. So it was pretty classy. I'm actually not too surprised there. I mean, when we saw him at the Royal Rumble, the ROH show at the Royal Rumble in 2015, I mean, I figured he'd be gone in like a year. So he stuck around for another one. You know, real talented guy. You know, Keith Lee, another guy where, you know, we thought that he was going to stick around because Shane Taylor, his tag team partner, signed. And Keith may not get as much sympathy out there. You know, it depends on whose story you listen to on where he told them or not. And so that was a little bit up in the air there. And then they kind of booked an angle with him and they still had to go through with it. And so they did do the blow off match and he's done with the company now also. I thought it was interesting, not to spoil or anything, that he didn't take the fall in the match that his last match, which didn't make any sense to me, but so. Yes, a lot of change there, you know, and so with Kyle O'Reilly being the biggest one is the title change at Wrestle Kingdom was a shock. I mean, outside of those that kind of knew that it was coming or maybe didn't want to believe it, thought that the last minute they surely get a deal done. That's one of the things that you can read from Sean Radican and the PW Torch kind of talking about some of the backstage scuttle is, you know, the delirious, the booker there and manager, you know, kind of operates with the idea that everything will come together at the last minute, maybe a little procrastinating. And then Kyle O'Reilly's
great way to
like,
live life.
Right. I know. As a manager too. Like, I mean, we've all probably been there, but we kind of learned like the first time. And so, you know, kind of just thought that it would happen. But see, to your earlier point, Steve, and your lead here is, you know, the landscape's changing. So it's, you know, since the middle of 2015, there's been talk about the WWE's ramping up, right? So it's changing now. We've talked a little bit before on this show about, you know, how they can still tell stories when guys are just working year to year. We talked about that with Moose moving on. And so, you know, they've been slower to adapt with that, and it really hit them there with O'Reilly because, now, I don't necessarily blame them for finishing his story and giving him the belt. That was the right story, and I thought that they did a solid job of having a backup plan because, you know, at the last minute, he changed the match to no DQ, so Adam Cole had a complaint there. They went to Japan. Adam Cole beat him because he didn't re-sign. He beat him clean as a sheet. And so, you know, on paper, if you look at it like in a vacuum, you're like, all right, you know, that story makes sense. This guy, you know, Kyle O'Reilly should have won, but they get the belt off him in a pretty clean manner. They didn't have to strip it or anything like that because he showed up elsewhere or whatever. The other issue that Ring of Honor is going on there too is, and I think it goes back to Steve Corino, is kind of what's been reported is, you know, WWE with tampering with their contracted people. And some people scuttle this and think like, oh, they're holding people back from joining the WWE. And Ring of Honor's never been like that. They've always been very upfront with it. But look, let's be honest. If they were going to let people tamper with their contracts, why have contracts? So
right.
you can't operate like that. So all they did was, and this was pretty clear because WWE ran a thing about Steve Corino visiting the Performance Center and teaching there for a week. He was under contract with Ring of Honor. They were I mean, look, Ring of Honor was happy for Steve. I was at his final show. You could hear the eruption and cheering for him backstage. But you have to protect your property. If they let that go and don't enforce the contract or send a sternly worded letter, then they can do it again and say, well, you didn't this time, right? So you didn't do it with this guy, so we can get away with it with this guy. And then it maybe doesn't hold up in court as well. So you have to enforce your contracts. It's a, you know, that's business. It's, so that was where I think some frustration with O'Reilly came in too, is because WWE was very quick to say, well, we're not going to deal with ROH guys until 60 days after their contracts are up. And when WWE comes out with that, that kind of tells you that they know they were in the wrong. Mm-hmm. They took the letter. They said, okay, here's what we're going to do. So that's why I think you're going to see guys like Dijak. Well, not Dijak per se, but like O'Reilly, I think is like March or something. You may see him start up like an NXT after WrestleMania. And, you know, we'll see where other guys go to. Like Adam Cole's contract goes through April. See where he shows up, you know, maybe in June or whatever. So that's kind of the landscape of where things were going, and that was before they could actually do any wrestling and get some new TV on the air. So,
right. And so, like, and we try not to do spoilers on the show, but you know, the latest TV taping that was in Pittsburgh, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. A much different roster, and to be fair, it was also the top prospect tournament so going on. So that is a general rule. Some of the couple TV tapings in the beginning have a lot of younger talent on them. But when you're looking at the normal guys, you have we were talking about this with SmackDown earlier on. Kind of up top, you have a much smaller group going on up there, and a lot of them are mainstays. You know, your Briscoes, your Jay Lethal, and really now too, like, you know, Daniel's getting back into the a singles role. You know, talk about a full circle. You know, sure. from main eventing on some of the first 3, 4, 5 shows, and now here we are again. What's your thought on the different roster? I'd say, you know, is this going to be what's going to happen going forward? Do you think they're going to maybe give some more opportunities to the international people that they've had come in?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. So I think one thing they have done a good job with so far this year is how they've structured their TV. And this goes back to the O'Reilly story too, is the first episode in Philly, the two nights after Final Battle that I was at, had O'Reilly. That was his last Ring of Honor match, like on Ring of Honor TV, and they aired that prior to Wrestle Kingdom, mm-hmm. where the other three episodes they waited on. Thought that was smart, good follow up, like a week or two after it aired, but before that match. And so they built the Decade of Excellence, and that's still running on TV right now. And that's all building to the 15th anniversary show in early March. So they have a pretty good arc going here. And so, but again, you know, guys that have been popular like Dijak, Leo Rush, you know, Dijak's gone. Leo Rush is still involved, and we're going to see him, we're going to see him against Marty Scurll. Spoilers at – well, actually, no, they've announced that at the 15th anniversary show. And Marty's a guy that, contrary to all like their, you know, maybe walking on eggshells, is he's a guy they brought in. And this is what gives you maybe a sliver of hope that they do understand the marketplace now and that maybe they're learning from mistakes they made with guys like Dijak, because Skrull is getting a mega push. And he's got it out after 6 months. But they've done everything they can to promote him. Huge TV vignettes. They aired both his matches from the London tour prior to his debut. They made a big deal about his debut on TV. They had him do commentary to set up the TV title match. You know, he faced Juice Robinson at the Atlanta tapings and then did commentary like the week after that. So he's been really engaged with it. So if he's someone that doesn't stick around, that's not an example of where you could hold that against Ring of Honor. They did everything they could. So that's a positive thing, because a guy like Dijak, it's like, man, when is this guy going to get a push? And maybe they were being skittish because they couldn't come to a deal or whatever. With Marty, they do have him under a deal, but they're actually kind of pushing someone here now. So it's good to see. He's a pretty fresh face and has been a nice sign for TV, because to your point, on the flip, you know, the main event picture now is the story of Christopher Daniels and his build to facing Adam Cole. And a lot of people think that the title could potentially turn there because of Cole's status, which has always been a thing. And look, Adam Cole's been there. He's done his duty. You know, he's more than earned the opportunity to move on if he wants to. And so that's kind of the story they're building to now. And it's not one that I think they're building it right. And Daniels has been awesome worker. And Nate, I mean, you know him from TNA, whatever. It's hard to imagine in 2017, 15 years after Ring of Honor, and he's been in the business for, you know, since like the mid-90s, if not a little bit before, you know, kind of with the small indies and stuff. He's still going out there, man. He's still great. And so I think that it's going to be interesting to see what they do. You know, Steve, you hinted at the TV changes, and it's not – I don't think it's a spoiler that they actually have the Bullet Club is – obviously, they're a big group here. You talked about the top of the card. And they move Cody Rhodes into it after he debuted in New Japan as going to be in the Bullet Club. And I was a little disappointed that, to be honest. I thought Cody was really fresh as like a lone heel. Right. And it kind of sucked to have him like join right in with like Adam Cole, the top of the card on the one side. It's a little bit boring, even though Cody himself of a fresh character for Ring of Honor. So then they've recently now they've turned Kazarian against Daniels, who really stacked the deck. In this story that they're going to tell through February TV, building up to the 15th anniversary. Steve, are you a fan of them going this far with the Bullet Club, adding that now Kazarian's in there, and of course Adam Page joined back back. Well, God, it's been since Global War of the Worlds last year, last May or whatever it is. So,
I am not, and I usually like to let things play out a little bit before judging them. I try not to have too many hot takes about stuff. I'm like, okay, maybe they're telling the story here. It's long term. That's why I like, watching wrestling and watching television in general is long term storytelling that can take place over months, not days. But the whole point of the Bullet Club from the beginning is like these outsiders coming in, in Japan, the outsiders coming in and taking over. Kazarian, not an outsider. Adam Page, right. I get more kind of he was almost like a free agent type within Ring of Honor. He had just broken up with the Decade, and almost like a loose cannon type character. So that one I was okay with. I would say his image kind of fit. But you're talking about a group that in Japan has kind of fizzled out a bit, and the majority of the members are on the within the undercard, with the exception of obviously Omega, Takahashi, getting the big chance at on January 4th with Kushida, but not as prevalent as it was in say 2013, 2014, through 2015, I'd say. So it's kind of just bizarre, I think, that in Ring of Honor, it's just the opposite. It's pretty much getting all the television. You don't even have Omega, really. It's more Cole and the Bucks and their and the rest of everyone else until you bring in Cody now. Okay, yeah, makes sense. He's an outsider, but looked better as a heel on his own.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think that, and just real quick, so that Takahashi is different than Hiromu Takahashi. Yujiro is a...
Yes.
They have a lot of Takahashis.
And I was going to say Tanahashi. That's not even either.
So they have – I mean, everybody makes like the NWO like B-team jokes. And honestly, I mean, it's not a bad, quip to make, right? I mean, you're going to see, that's why Kenny Omega and them came up with the Elite, because all of a sudden all these, other guys are joining in, like Cody Rhodes, Hangman Page, Adam Cole. Was another one they added, Page, right after they added Cole.
Right.
In addition to the regular mainstay guys that wrestle in the multi-man tag over in Japan. So, I think that it didn't sit well. It would be interesting to see how it plays off in TV. The general reaction was, not a good one, because it seemed like this is a guy that's been with Daniels forever. Why would he want to join that group? I honestly think that it would have been more compelling if Daniels had a little backup, given how big you just described, how big the Bullet Club is. It would be a little bit better, I think, if he had like his buddy there to do tags against them instead of being the lone wolf. But they're going to tell that story, and maybe that plays into why he doesn't win the belt, and maybe he feuds with Kazarian, and maybe he doesn't win it at the 15th anniversary, or maybe Cole stays on for a little bit, or maybe they flip it Mania weekend with Dalton Castle. They have the title involved with a lot of people, so they have a couple different ways they could go here.
Mm. And then real quick, Brad, because you're talking about Cody Rhodes and his involvement, and I'm wondering, in terms of the roster and the makeup of Ring of Honor, it feels like this real transitional phase, I guess I'd say, where you've got some names and faces that have been around for a while, like your Jay Lethals and your Daniels and your Kazarians, your Young Bucks, your Briscoes. But you've also got this big international contingent, and then you've got, some of these other free agents. And I'm wondering, in terms of a destination, in terms of an employer, do you feel like ROH has kind of lost some luster within the business in terms of a place to work? Or is it just we're not seeing the fruits of that acknowledgement within the industry? In other words, is this a place where people are looking to go when they get released from the WWE, or if they're out on the independents, or if they're having problems with TNA? Is this still a destination place, or has this kind of transitioned into something different?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a loaded one, because we can draw a correlation maybe a little bit to TNA. Is the main people there start to seem like you have like your Alex Shelley's and Chris Sabin's, and they're fantastic wrestlers, you know, and they had a good 2016, and you're Daniels and Lethal and these guys, and it starts to seem like the top is kind of a, you know, where guys go and the pay is good and it's a good job, but like, where are these young guys going? And so what Ring of Honor has to do is when they bring these young guys in, they got to show them like a plan, right? Because look, everybody wants to get to WWE. And one thing that I think is comical is how people talk about, oh, well, WWN is the gateway to WWE. If that was the case, WWE wouldn't be waiting 60 days to contact Ring of Honor guys. Let's be honest. If you're a good wrestler, they're going to take you from wherever. Roddy Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole, you know, like guys are going to move on, you know, say to kind of use that to his leverage point, that's fine. But you know, the difference between Evolve and Ring of Honor is, you know, Evolve goes a month. Ring of Honor is a company. You know, they run television, they run, you know, multiple house shows a month, they run Japanese tours. So like when people talk about how, you know, and how they bring talent in is, you know, they run their camps, right? And some people are, you know, we can all sit at the keyboard and be like, well, you should sign this guy, he's really good. Ring of Honor does it a different way. I've actually defended it in the past because I think of it as like a job interview. If I'm going to bring you in, you're going to be a part of my TV. You're going to be a part of my locker room. I kind of want to see you over a couple days. Gabe doesn't have to do that. He can handpick the best guys, pay him what he pays them. I don't know if it's good or not, but always, you know, dangle that carrot, you know, that, oh, well, you know, WWE and, you know, Triple H is so. And that's good for him. You know, I would do the same thing if I was him. So to your point about it being a destination, this is where it becomes a little bit of an issue. Because, you know, last winter, this time a year ago, I would say to you, sure, Lio Rush just signed for a year. Like, mm-hmm. He was a great signing. You know, you had Dijak, you had Moose still. You had these guys where – but when these young guys come in and they're – and I'm not going to pay – homage to like all the rumors and stuff backstage, but look, you got to tell these guys, you got to give these guys a blueprint, because if they're not going anywhere, they're just going to be waiting until their contract's up, and then they're going to go to WWN or whatever and try to get into WWE. But if you want to, and I think the Jokov wants to do this, because when they re-signed the Bucks to 2-year deals, the idea was, look, we want to be an alternate to WWE, not a stepping stone, but one where guys would be like, you know what, I would like to make my career there. And I think they can do it. But they got to bring these young guys in, and they have to push them. And it's – look, not everybody has to have a belt. Not everybody can win every week. But there has to be like some kind of plan with them, because otherwise it starts to fill up with these older vets that are kind of hanging in there. They quickly sign their deals, like, you know, your BJ Whitmers and Silas Young. And these guys sign in, and then they – look, you can't sign everybody. A lot of people think that Ring of Honor – has like Sinclair's checkbook or whatever. That's not how business works. They have a budget, right? But if your budget is filled up with guys like Alex Shelley, who I like, yeah, like you're not going to be able to put money. And look, they gave Keith Lee the same – it was the same money offer. That's what was reported. So he made a choice. And you know what? Sometimes it's the best you can do, right? Same offer. He wanted to go somewhere else. That's what it is. They couldn't afford to give him any more, I guess, or whatever. But so I think it's a great question. I think it's going to be the story that we see unfold in 2017 is how they catch up to that. Because really, it wasn't that long ago that Ospreay and Skrull signed, and Skrull was a huge signing. And I'm going to give credit to Chad with this. But, you know, this is a guy that was about to be Evolve champion that they stole away from WWN. You know, prior to the Flow Slam money and all that stuff, which can add a little bit into it. But so, I mean, they, you know, this momentum in the fall, I think, was still there. But you know, we'll find out how the office is going to look and creatively how that's going to look now with the different changes coming and the ones that we talked about earlier. So that is a great question. Does my correlation to kind of TNA, maybe older TNA, I mean, maybe you could say now that TNA is more of a destination for younger guys, you know, Trevor Lees and Andrew Everett's and whatnot, and their schedule is obviously limited. They don't tour. Ring of Honor does. So, but I think that they could be close to kind of, it could be dangerous where they could become something like that older TNA.
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. One, Ring of Honor's changed a bit, but also the industry has changed. You know, it's not 5 or 10 years ago where if you had the opportunity to get to a Ring of Honor or a TNA, you could theoretically, you know, that could be the be all end all. And, you know, you could make a great living doing that. But now there's so many different options and so many paths to get to the WWE, which, like it or not, folks, like Brad said, if you're in this business or if you're in any business, you want to be the best and you'd like to work for the best, you know? And so if the WWE is your destination, there's a lot of different paths now. And so while I think like Ring of Honor still has the potential to be really great and a really great place to work and can be that destination, they do need that plan because, you know, a lot of people like to make that correlation between ROH and ECW back.
You're right. I mean, the business with ROH has changed itself, and Sinclair is, you know, syndicated television is their way to go. And for some guys, I mean, that is the allure. I mean, I know that Marty Scurll, you know, he was reporting, he wanted to be on TV. He's on TV, man. They're smart to have him out there, and that's a big deal to guys. And again, you know, he's a smart guy because eventually you got the talent. If you want to move elsewhere, you want to be in WWE, there you go. You know, the thing with WWE, too, is they've been signing a lot of guys. But, you know, Steve, in any business, or maybe you think of like a sports analogy, is that, you know, eventually they're going to look at their budget and say, well, we're not making as much money as we could. Wow, we have a really bloated roster. And then mm-hmm. these guys are going to flood back into the indies. And Ring of Honor could be, you know, a destination for them.
And there might be some who aren't welcome back in the indies. You know, there's some of the guys who are taking a chance, but they're burning bridges as they take that chance.
Or they want too much money.
Right.
You know, with Nate talking about Cody real quick, and, you know, he had a set number of dates with the Ring of Honor that he still has, and I'm not sure what his deal is with New Japan, but because I think people have asked, you showed up on TNA, you know, even after Final Battle, because I think we had thought at first he was done. He said he was, and he showed back again. But he's an example of a guy that seems to be, you know, applying well in there. I mean, there may be some scuttle around, you know, like wins and losses or whatnot, but, you know, by all accounts in the locker rooms and whatnot, he's been welcomed, and Kevin had nice things to say about him on commentary with how he came in too. But you're right, like guys like Ryback and them that left, I mean, he's not, you know, he's, by all accounts, I've read, you know, has a huge price. They're not interested in bringing Del Rio back again. They mm-hmm. used him. I thought they used him well. I'm kind of in the minority there. I don't know why. I thought he wrestled fine, and then they had Lethal go over him on his way to winning the title. So I thought that was fine. But they're not going to – those guys. And that's good, right? Because some of these guys, I mean, you have to bring some juice in. You know, Bull James –
yeah.
You know, I haven't seen the TV with him with that, but I mean, he stunk in the Florida match. He came out in the Philly tapings I was at, and like by the end there was like one guy cheering for him. And so like you know. So yeah, everybody that comes out of there, you don't have to scoop up. They have to be careful, you know, I think, and kind of, you know, make your plays where you can. One of the things that they, you know, their contracts, which have been well talked about, is they have exclusive contracts where guys can only work for them in the U.S. They can take whatever they want internationally. So that's where guys like Lethal and the Briscoes and the Bucks have that deal. Then they can work PWG too. And guys like Dalton Castle has that type of deal. And then their other deals are the non-exclusive deals where they work the Ring of Honor dates and they have the Ring of Honor calendar, but they can work other ones, but they can't work for WWN, they can't work for WWE, and they can't work for Flow Slam. So any company that's going to have them, they can't appear on their streaming service if it's going to be streamed on FlowSlam, which makes complete sense to me from a business standpoint. And WWE did the same thing with their contracts, which is why all that UK talent has been pulled off of some of those dates. Because any business where they're supposed to be like, why am I going to let my guy make money for somebody else on somebody else's streaming platform? Right. WWE, you know, like I said, they did the same thing. So that's to Nate's point about how the business is changing. That's changing too. And we'll see, you know, what Ring of Honor can do to keep up with that from an application standpoint on how people consume their product. Antiquated is not a, you know, a term they would probably disagree with. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where that goes to this year.
Yeah, and I think actually that's a good place to stop, because I think it's a good transition into what we're going to be talking about next, which is Chikara. And they're having – I wouldn't necessarily say it's a problem, but they're having a similar flux in talent. Mm-hmm. And I think they might be dealing with it a little differently as they are wont to do with a little bit of strange creative decisions. And strange in this place, I believe, is a good thing. So BRAD in all caps, we're going to thank you for
– Thank you, guys.
Thank you for coming on and talking ROH for us. And we'll have you back on, and we may even have you on back next time too, so we can just back Kevin into the corner and grill him a little bit, make him sweat.
Have him bring that podcast back. That's what we want. You know, you when word came out about him stepping down with that, there were like a couple people that were like, does that mean he's going to, this show's going to come? So he didn't outright dismiss it, but I mean, people were fans of it. So,
yeah. I know Dan McGinn was, but I don't know. He might be occupied.
I don't know about Dan. I have to go back and negotiate with him. We'll see.
He may jump to WWN himself.
He could.
All right. Sipping backstage lattes with Gabe. Well, we will let you go, Brad. Thanks again for joining us. We will take a quick commercial break, and we will come back on, and we will bring the silly, we will bring the happy, and we will bring the Shikara.
PWO-PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
I used to feel down, but I hit the ground running.
We are back in Clotheslines and Headlines, and, you know, if you ever go to a concert and they're just jamming out for a while and then they slow it down a little bit, they come away from their drum kits, they bring out the acoustics, they get the drumsticks with the little feathers on them, and that's what we're going to do right now. We got our acoustic set. We have kicked everyone out of the studio except for Glenn Butler and myself, and this is something we've wanted to do on this show for a long time, and I think we might do a little offshoot stuff, hopefully, as this year goes on. And let's talk about one of our favorite pet promotions, which is Chikara. Glenn, how long have you been watching Chikara? Putting you on the spot here a little bit, but...
I have watched every show that they've produced, well, every show that they've aired, as it were, since King of Trios in September 2016. I've kind of... a late adopter, a recent adopter, but I have been kind of a fan of theirs on the periphery for longer than that. There was a show in 2015 that I went to mainly based off your enthusiasm for the product. Once I heard that they were coming to the great state of Connecticut, as they are again at the beginning of March, and I'm really excited to go this time. I had heard of them previously in... the context of some of the videos that they had that went viral, presents like one side of Chikara, and it is multifaceted. You know, to the extent that the common indie wrestling fan or the common wrestling fan might have heard of them, it's probably one of the videos of Amasis and Ophidian hypnotizing an opponent, or someone going in slow motion, or... the history of Darkness Crabtree and the 23.5-hour wrestling match with, you know, Darkness Crabtree, the octogenarian luchador.
Yes.
Some of the sillier elements. And those are there, absolutely. But like I said, it's multifaceted, and there are lots of different levels to get into with it, as I've discovered, thanks to you, mostly.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, I have the kind of the reputation around, you know, PlaySpeed Nation of being, like, the big diehard. Like, I've actually probably watched maybe even less shows than you at this point. I knew of it. I'd seen like a match here or there, like maybe on comp tapes, like some of El Generico stuff. The first time I actually saw them live was with a split show with Ring of Honor in Chicago. They did like a Chikara show in the afternoon and then a Ring of Honor show at night. And they just kind of like cross promoted. And then, I would pick up the iPay-per-views. They had a High Noon was the first one, and they had a couple of those a year. And so I would watch those. And then they started coming to Chicago regularly a few years ago. And I've been to most of those shows. And I tell people all the time, if you like wrestling and you like just having fun, being at a Chikara show, I will argue, is better than any other wrestling experience. Just for the amount of fun, the amount of like interaction you can have with the people involved in the show, both behind the scenes and in the ring. And every time I go, it kind of reaffirms my enjoyment of wrestling. I went to the season 16 finale, which is where we're kind of going to start our conversation. It occurred in December. It was a double shot in Chicago. They do like an afternoon show and an evening show. And I was not in a happy place with wrestling. Just tired of the WWE. Nothing that they have done really wrong. It's just, kind of getting monotonous for me personally. I understand that a lot of other people are not going to be that way, but it's just where I was at in life. And I really enjoyed the finale. And to kind of recap that, because we're going to have the season, we just had the season premiere, but it's very important to know where they came from, because we're going to be skipping around quite a bit here. And the five main storylines that happened, from my perspective, at the season 16 finale in December, number one, the aforementioned Amaesis lost an Apuestas match, which is, basically losing his mask to Frightmare. And all intents and purposes, it seems like he is done with the company. I saw a video of him unmasked, that he's going to be more of a straight, laced, kind of a grappling type wrestler, looking to travel around. And he hasn't really been seen or talked about in Chikara since he left. Second was the retirement of Soldier Ant, who, Glenn, can you kind of say what happened to poor Soldier Ant?
Well, of course, Soldier Ant, a member of the colony, a stable of ants in Chikara, and on their luchador masks, of course, they have their antennae, which are very important for ants to locate where they are in the ring and to communicate with each other. And so all of the ants in the colony had preternatural skills to know where they were in the ring to, for instance, find a rope during a pinfall or a submission, or just general ring awareness due to these antennae. And Soldier Ant, in contrast, had one antenna because he lost the other one in the war.
Right.
So he came in with just the one. And toward the end of season 16 of Chikara, one of the Hexed Men, one of the other storylines you're going to get to in a second.
Yeah.
Brutally ripped the single antenna off of the head of Soldier Ant, and it was a hush fell over the crowd. It was sudden, it was brutal, it was tragic. And so at the finale that you attended, they had a retirement ceremony for Soldier Ant because, of course, he was blinded now.
Yes, and cannot see.
Exactly. Totally incapacitated in terms of wrestling. So they retired him with honor on a stoic but festive occasion. And it was really just a touching scene.
And all joking aside, in terms of the touching scene, if you can imagine, the silliness of that, what you just said. And for real, I am not lying when I say this. There were three people in the crowd crying, legitimately crying when this occurred. There was a moment of silence that it was one of those moments of silence that almost penetrated. Like, it went on a little bit too long, and I think they kind of did it on purpose. And they three people in the crowd started weeping. It was incredible. Like,
well, that's what I'm getting at when I talk about Chikara working on multiple levels, right?
Yeah.
Because the colony used to be just pure comedy fodder when they first started a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are longtime Chikara veterans. And, you know, over time, they go through various storylines. Some of the colony turned heel and feuded with the rest of the colony. Some of them, you know, became Campeones de Parejas at one point. They won the King of Trios at one point. They build up wins and become more credible over time. And so the characters that you think of as just comedy fodder also have this other side to them where they're actual legitimate wrestlers as well.
Yeah, very talented.
And so when you're seeing someone retire and leave Chikara, it's going to be an emotional moment if there's someone that you're invested in. And Chikara is very, very good at doing the comedy, doing the silliness, and also getting you to invest in the characters.
Right, and it's one of the advantages, and I think that some companies try to do this but fail. They do interact with the crowd, as I said before, quite a bit, both in-ring and out-of-ring, like before the show, after the show, during intermission. You can go up and shake hands and talk. They will meet with you after the show and say thank you and goodbye and shake hands with you as you are leaving the show. And I think that helps you feel part of the family, and it helps you identify with the characters more, where you can make that emotional connection because you feel like you know them in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. The one show that I was at live so far, the kind of premise of the show was that Jervis Cottonbelly, your favorite, and Princess Kimberly were going to challenge for the Campeones de Parejas in the main event. And, you know, the ring announcer at the time, Gavin Loudspeaker, kept saying, you know, there's some transportation problem, Jervis is having troubles getting here. And he got to the building, I won't say arena, he got to the building just at intermission and spent the entire intermission, you know, milling around with the crowd and talking to people and taking pictures and just kind of making you feel like you're part of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's quite the fun show. So the second half, Soldier, I believe, retired in the first half of the show. And the second half of the show, the big match was the Cibernetico, which is I don't think we're going to really be able to get into the details of that match too much without going for 5 minutes.
So many storylines encapsulated in one match. It was an 8-on-8 elimination match.
Set for
15 falls.
Yeah, it's a Survivor Series style matchup. Only the competitors are they have a batting order. So once one person leaves the ring, the next person in line has to come in. You can't like tag out to the sixth person in line. You have to go in order, and the people are eliminated Survivor Series style. And the little trick to it is, if there are, say, three guys left on one team and no one left at the end on the other team, those three guys then go against each other, however many people are left on the winning team. So one person ultimately wins. And this year's Cibernetico, it's a yearly occurrence, was basically a mishmash of a lot of the Chikara faces. And they were all against the Hexmen, as you said, which were led by the champion Hollow Wicked. And powered by the god, the demon. We don't know for sure because we've never seen him. And that person, god, whatever, is called Nazmaldun.
Yes, I have in my own life been referring to him as the Dread God.
The Dread God. And so, Hollow Wicked, Frightmare, they're the big two. How do you describe Ultramantis's role in all of this?
Ultramantis, okay. at one point during 2016, Hollow Wicked and Frightmare, they stole an artifact known as the Eye of Tyr. from its previous possessor. I wouldn't say owner, because the Eye of Tyr has its own viewpoint. Jakob Hammermeier had it for several storylines in the past. And the Eye of Tyr... Oh, goodness. The Eye of Tyr allows you to possess and kind of brainwash another wrestler. Jakob Hammermeier had used it on Delirious in the past, but it's also a cursed object. When you use it to possess someone and don't give up ownership of it within a certain period of time, if I recall my history correctly, then fortunes will turn on you.
Correct. Yep. That is what I understand it to be as well.
And so after Hallowicked and Frightmare, who were already devotees of the dread god Nazmaldun, took the Eye of Tyr from Jakob Hammermeier, they used it to hex several people. That's why they're called...
Multiple people.
Yes, that's why they're called the Hexed Men. And Ultramantis Black was a wrestler who had retired in the past, was at the commentation station for some time, and was possessed by Nazmaldun. He was the earthly avatar of Nazmaldun. He would accompany the Hexed Men to the ring for many of their matches and kind of represent the interests and the power of Nazmaldun, while Hallowicked, the Grand Champion, and Frightmare also used the Eye of Tyr to possess and influence Marcangelo Setti, the former Mr. Touchdown, who had been going through issues with his tag team partner. And so...
Step-cousin-in-law.
His step-cousin-in-law as well, yes. Dasher Hatfield, one of Chikara's mightiest heroes. And Icarus, one of Chikara's longtime lead faces. He was something of a superhero in the world of Chikara, was... possessed, was influenced by the Eye of Tyr and joined the Hexed Men. And they became brutal heels. They kept going after people's masks. When they were in a match with Dasher or Amasis, leading to the Apuestus match you mentioned, they would go after people's masks. They would brutally attack people. Part of the tension, I think, of the Nazmaldun storyline was that given the investment that you have in a lot of the face characters, if you've been watching for a while and have really developed that investment, is that you don't know when you might see a show and one of your favorites is suddenly evil.
Right.
Because such is the power of Nazmaldun. And that's what... the Cybernetico was really all about. There were 8 Hexed Men, you know, on the side of Nazmaldun, accompanied by Ultramantis Black, the earthly avatar of Nazmaldun, against Chikara's mightiest heroes, the faces who could be kind of massed together to oppose them.
And ultimately, Dasher Hatfield, who you talked about, the old-timey King of Swing, emerged victorious. And I would say he's probably, in my opinion, the biggest face of the company right now. And after the match, Ophidian, who is a Cobra Man, a man who is a cobra.
Indeed. he's the King of Snake Style.
Yes. And the longtime partner of Amasis came out and smashed the Eye of Tyr, which I believe Ultramantis was holding at the time.
It was around his neck. Ophidian snatched it from around his neck and ran off, at which point Ultramantis, who had been in a wheelchair this whole time, stood up, got in the ring, and told Hallowicked, "I remember everything."
And the building was silent. Like, and not in a, like, what is this? This is like, whoa, what is going to happen next type deal. And it was like, end scene.
Yes.
And we don't have to touch on this too much here, but they did have a surprise encore. And we've talked about doing a little match of the year for Chikara, a little mini show. But Drew Gulak came out, who obviously had been in the Cruiserweight Classic. He'd been on WWE TV. No surprise that that he was leaving. Long-time member of Chikara, the head trainer, in fact, I believe, along with Mike Quackenbush. It's mostly Gulak who was running the school. He came out and, you know, basically to say goodbye, and he said he had a chance for one more match. Mike Quackenbush gave him, you know, said, hey, who do you want to wrestle? He talked about wanting to wrestle his younger brother, but younger brother was not able to be there. So he wanted to pick his second choice, and out came Mike Quackenbush himself, someone who's really only wrestled once in the last couple of years. And they had one hell of a match that could not, you know, I might argue is the match of the year in Chikara, but like an actual true match of the year candidate in all of wrestling.
It was a very good kind of back and forth submission grappling style match.
Right. Something that Gulak likes to do, but, you know, Quack is, you know, limited in his movement from, you know, real life injuries. And so it was amazingly hard hitting. I think they made up for what Quack couldn't do with some of his more flying lucha-esque type moves and did more of a lucha ground game type match and made up for it by just really smacking the tar out of each other.
They smacked each other pretty good a few times and cinched in some of those submissions pretty hard,
yeah,
too.
It was something to see live. That was, you know, pretty much the end of the season. You wait for, you know, a couple months, kind of like we talked about Ring of Honor, to find out what happened next. And they generally start off the year with National Pro Wrestling Day, which has been a few years old. It's a free event. They raise funds for charity, do it at their Wrestle Factory, and they had a Young Lions Cup tournament. They do that pretty much every year. A lot of rookies who come in. Anyone who impressed you out of the 16 Young Lions Cup participants this year is a pretty big tournament.
Yeah, well, there were several people we were seeing for the first time.
Yes,
in the tournament there was there was Silverhawk and Razorhawk, two of the Cyberhawks 2000 team. There was the former Travis, last name unnecessary, no longer a referee, but now Travis Huckabee, a wrestler, and a better wrestler than I would have expected for the former referee.
Yeah, he has a little bit of a, as I was watching, I was trying to think who he reminded me of, almost like a Bob Backlund type wrestler, you know, kind of amateur style, not maybe like some of the Evolve guys who do the extreme kind of grappling style with like just ridiculous holds, but more of like a ground type guy. Alex the Pug Porteau, he also reminded me of, and I mean that in a good way, like just kind of amateur style wrestling. Yeah, it was kind of surprising.
Yeah, he went on to have a match at another show with the submission specialist of the colony, Silver Ant, a seasoned veteran in Chikara, and it was a pretty good kind of smooth submission match. Their transitions between holds were very smooth for a rookie, essentially.
Yeah, and let's just skip over Murlock.
Murlock, ugh, I swear, in the four-way elimination match, he seemed like a very good base for the three smaller competitors to kind of do their high spots and kind of fly around him. We saw him in a singles match later on, and that was less good. So I think you have to grow a lot of these people on a curve, though.
Right, since it's are dealing with pretty much rookies. Everyone in the tournament is under 25 years old.
Right.
Many of whom had not been seen on a televised show at all to this point.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few who were semi-regulars in Chikara last season. There was Hermit Crab and Cajun Crawdad had been in a couple of matches.
Cornelius Kremels and Sonny DeParge, who are kind of like these old-timey sick characters, and I mean literally sick.
Yeah, they are spreading germs everywhere they go in their kind of Dickensian getup, which Crummles and DeFarge had a I don't want to say long-term, because it was a few months, but it felt very long-term feud with another rookie team, Dez Peloton, in the final months of 2016. And I don't think they had a match that I would call particularly good until that finale, Double Shot, where they had the final match in that series.
That was something. That was the first time I had seen any of them, and that was a sight to see when you have two bikers and bikers. I feel like we have to explain every single
gimmick.
I mean, actual two-wheel actual pedal bikes.
Bike shorts, helmets, yes, bikers. Helmets, yes.
So, the Young Lions Cup itself has been... It's changed a lot over the years, but now it's mostly a title that you can defend, but at the end of the year, you give it up for the next tournament, and you can't join, you can't defend after the year is up.
Right.
This year, I believe Estonian Thunder Frog won it last year.
Yes.
Heidi Lovelace the year before. And this year, not so much of a surprise winner, a very much loved winner in our good friend Space Monkey.
Oh, yes, the Space Monkey.
That's one we don't have to explain. It is pretty clear by his name what he is.
We've talked about him before on Clotheslines and Headlines, in fact.
Yes, a monkey from space.
He also had an appearance on the Colt Cabana podcast in which he explained that he learned wrestling by NASA Teach.
Oh.
NASA Teach.
I have a friend who has worked with NASA in the past, doing some work for them, and I did not know that they had a wrestling division.
Well, they took this monkey, sent him to space, and he landed on the moon,
mm-hmm.
where he went to wrestling training.
Huh. I can see that, yeah.
And now look at him, the success he's had.
Yeah, the new 13th Young Lions Cup champion winner.
I am hoping that this means that the Space Monkey will be more of a regular in Shikara this year. He made a couple of appearances last season, but I'm hoping that this year he'll be around more since he's the Lions Cup champion now.
Yeah, for the most part, with a couple rare exceptions, the people who win the Young Lions Cup go on to stay with the company for a couple of years. So, yeah, that is a good hope. But really, we've been skirting the main issue.
Yes.
Like, we've been kind of skipping around the main reason we wanted to talk about Shikara tonight. And that is, man, the secret season is really the only thing you can call it, the secret season.
Yes, the secret season, the lost season. See, that's a pun.
Yes, it is a pun. As I mentioned at the beginning, season 16 was where in December where they left off. And a couple times during the pro wrestling day, they referred to it as season 18. And at the end of the show, there was a shocking moment with the aforementioned Ultramantis Black.
Yes. Ultramantis Black came out to give a promo, and he was talking about times when you may be down, times when you may not be sure of yourself, and the kind of hard questions that you ask yourself. And his promo started to wander a little bit, and you start thinking, what is he coming around to? What is the point that he's making here? And then his promo culminates with Ultramantis undoing his robe and revealing the Chikara Grand Championship around his waist.
To audible gasps from the crowd. I don't know if you've gone back and watched it, but there is audible gasps from crowd members, like long-term fans. Like, okay, at the last event, Hollow Wicked was the Grand Champion. How is Ultramantis Black the champion?
Yeah, that was a pretty big moment. But I think until the very end of the show, the full extent of what's happened isn't really obvious.
Right. You wonder, did he steal the title or something like
that? Yeah, did he take the belt, and this is a point he's making now that he's coming out of retirement, he's going to get back at Hella Wicked. And that was another kind of hanging thread from last season. After the Eye of Tyr was destroyed, there was a question kind of hanging over Chikara, is the hex broken on all of the hexed men? Because Chikara uses, we're explaining everything, Chikara uses a point system to determine contenders for its championships.
Right.
And so if you get a win in a singles match, that gives you 1 point. You need 3 points, so three consecutive wins. If you lose, you lose your points. You need three consecutive wins to challenge for the grand title. And if you're a tag team, the same for the Campeonatos de Parejas. So Icarus and Mark Angelo Seti, Mr. Touchdown, both had 3 or 4 points at the end of the season, but would not challenge Hella Wicked because they were hexed by Nazmal Doon. So that was one of the things that was kind of hanging over. And so heading into 2017, you'd think if the hex is broken, there is a lot of comeuppance coming for Hella Wicked. And so for Ultra Mantis to have the title then kind of introduces a little more tension, a little more of the idea that you don't quite know what's going on.
And we didn't until the very end. And I actually didn't even hear this. And I had already been tipped off because I watched it a couple days later. But you had told me before we started recording that the announcer said at the end, thank you, something to the effect of thank you for watching the premiere of season 18. The first three events of season 17 are now available on Chikaratopia, their streaming service. And it was like, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah. That only then did it kind of sink in what had happened. That there was this entire kind of secret season that they filmed, like I said, in secret somehow, like at the Wrestle Factory with a crowd. I mean, they're normal shows.
Yeah, and what the fact that it was secret, we don't know when it was taped. It could have been taped before the season finale, for all we know. It could have been taped in January, but no one leaked it. It was not leaked on any on Meltzer or any websites. I pay attention. It was not on the board, their fan board and the messages. They kept it a legitimate secret, which in this day and age, where if you accidentally look at a website 24 hours before a major WWE pay-per-view, you know who's going to win every match because they'll put the odds. And that 9 times out of 10, those odds are correct. So to do in this day and age a secret show, not just a secret show, but anywhere from 3 to 9 secret shows, is amazing. And we're so far, three of them have launched. They're calling them wrestling's first bingeable content, and we are seeing some of the blanks being filled for what happened between season 16's finale and season 18.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I believe the first thing we see in the first episode of season 17 is Angelo Seti back in his Mr. Touchdown attire trying to make up with Dasher. But the kind of face that Dasher is the sort of, he has his moral center, and that is absolute.
Right. He is, perhaps more than any other wrestler in any organization, of the highest ethical code.
Yeah, he's very much a virtue ethicist.
Mm-hmm.
And so that first episode features Touchdown trying to make up with him, and then he goes on to use the 3 points that he accumulated in 2016 to challenge Hella Wicked now that the hex is broken. And so those pieces are falling within season 17. Now, as to how in the world they did this without it getting out, the only thing that I can think of is that Chikara is a family promotion, family friendly. And they emphasize this at the beginning of every show. The ring announcer says, we are a family-friendly promotion, so please don't be jerks, basically.
Right.
And with the audience that they've cultivated, they have an audience that will hear that message and buy into it and will not be jerks. And so the only explanation that seems believable to me is that they genuinely just asked the audience, hey, look, we're doing this thing. Please don't leak it. It'll be really cool.
And a lot of the people in the crowd were kids. It looked like maybe came in from a local school who got increasingly excited about the show as it went on, which was kind of cute, actually.
Yeah, I found that pretty endearing.
Yeah, like at first I had no idea what was going on, but really we're getting into some of the characters and the good guy, bad guy dynamic of the whole thing. And it actually made for a pretty hot crowd. So I don't even know how to end the segment. I was thinking about that as we were talking.
You mentioned before some of the people who were leaving Chikara of recent. Most notably, Drew Gulak, like we talked about. Also, Heidi Lovelace and Princess Kimberly. And they are both in season 17.
Yeah, we've seen matches. We've seen in little preview videos, bits of them in backstage segments, which usually is very rare for a Chikara show. They might have a little interview before a match to explain what's happening. But my guess is that in this season, Kimberly and Heidi will have their chance to say goodbye, like Gulak did, like Soldier Ant did. Even Jakob Hammermeyer had an exit scene with the Eye of Tyr. So,
I won't spoil it for you, but I believe the end of Heidi Lovelace is within the episodes that have launched.
That are released.
Yes. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I knew it was coming. So,
but there is more Kimberly. There's actually some interaction between Kimberly and Solo Darling. So I wonder if that'll be kind of a passing of the torch there.
Yeah. So in Solo Darling's case, like the passing of a giant lollipop or a caffeinated Mountain Dew.
Exactly. And honestly, maybe we should have seen something like this coming when they started announcing their 2017 events. And first, the events page just said events and not season 17 or season 18 or any season. And also, they were all named after Doctor Who episodes. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there is some timeline weirdness going on. And then when they started releasing their season 17 episodes for streaming, those are all named after episodes of Lost.
Right.
Which,
kudos to you. You were the first person who I heard mention that.
Yeah, and the logos for each episode are based on artwork and kind of graphical design from Lost as well. And so that really brings to mind the flashback, flash-forward story structure of Lost. And the time skip that they did between seasons 3 and 4 of Lost. As well as, I think, seasons 2 and 3 of Battlestar Galactica, and in a couple other shows to kind of jazz things up for good or ill, incorporating the time jump as a device to kind of have the events in the middle filled in from both ends. You know, there are things that you can infer from the shows we've seen in season 18, and then the shows in season 17 are filling in how those events happened.
Correct. Yeah. And that's what I thought was such a masterful job. And a couple of guys who we know, like Chad Campbell and Brad, who we had on previously, who are guys are – Chad watches Chikara occasionally, but it's not one of his big points. But I think for a good week straight, we were talking privately and messaging back and forth with trying to figure out exactly what was going on. I really wish some of your Twitter wrestling personalities would give this more of a time. Like, there were people who were complaining about it, who didn't watch it, have no idea what's going on with the product, and just criticized it at face value. But really,
yeah.
I don't know of any other wrestling promotion. Actually, I can pretty much equivocally say that no other wrestling promotion has tried this.
No, it's a story structure that I don't think has been done in wrestling before, and we can probably end on this. I don't think it's a structure that could be done anywhere else in wrestling.
Yes, I agree.
One, there is, I don't think there's any other audience in the world other than the Chikarmi that would let them film these things in secret.
Right.
And
not take videos and put them up on YouTube.
Yeah, or leak results or tweet pictures of it or whatever. Two, I don't think there's another wrestling promotion that really uses storytelling structures other than those typically seen in wrestling that could support something like this. Possibly Lucha Underground, but even then, I really don't think that they could have the goodwill to really pull this off.
Right, right, because stuff has leaked quite a bit about Lucha Underground.
A lot of stuff leaks about Lucha Underground, and honestly, Lucha Underground has also drawn the ire of the mayors of No Funnington.
Yes, they have. Well, I mean, Glenn, I you know, we've talked about this a few times, wanting to get Chikara on Clotheslines and Headlines, and we had to drop it for other things that more people were interested in. But my sincere hope is that people who are listening to it, even if it's just a couple of people, check it out. You can check out Chikaratopia. It's super inexpensive. Was it $7.99 a month, I believe?
A little less if you get 6 months at a time.
Yeah, you get a little break. I actually ended up doing the whole year this year just because this had intrigued me so much. First of the year after the season 16 finale, I had so much fun there that I'm like, you know what? I'm giving them my money.
And honestly, we're only scratching the surface here.
Yeah.
We're talking about broader kind of story structures and the culmination of lots of storylines, but the actual wrestling stands up to all of it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as we're taping this right now on a Wednesday evening, you have the current Chikara Tag Team Champions, the Champions de Parejas, fighting each other on NXT. So, you know, that is the caliber of wrestlers we're talking about.
And you know, if you can't get on board with a lot of the gimmicks, I suppose I understand. I quite viscerally disagree, but okay. A lot of the wrestlers are honestly good or great wrestlers. Hella Wicked, Dasher Hatfield, Juan Francisco de Coronado has had a lot of surprisingly good matches in the last 6 months or so, so much so that they're getting less surprising.
Yes.
Fire Ant, Silver Ant, Kimberly, Heidi Lovelace, they have a cadre of honestly great wrestlers, and more in their past. You know, Cesaro, Luke Harper, El Generico, before he went to run that orphanage. You know, there is a lot to dive into on a story level and on a wrestling level.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, we talked with Brad about, you know, Ring of Honor guys taking a chance in WWN. People in Chikara are skipping WWN. There are a couple of some of the lesser guys who are, you know, maybe like the Devastation Corporation, Jaka, people who are on the lower end of the card. Who are going to WWN, but, you know, Kimberly and Gulak. I mean, Gulak essentially went straight to Raw.
Yeah, basically.
All right, Glenn. We're going to make a point of revisiting this. I know both you and I have talked about watching all of the shows this year. I'm actually more in for doing that than I am to watch all the WWE shows. So eventually we're just going to take over Clotheslines and Headlines, and we're going to call it Chikara and Headlines.
Remake it in our image.
Yeah, and remake it in our own image, just like that's the plan. It's the plan like we've been doing all along. So we will come back. We will we'll find Nate. Hopefully he is not unmasked and he has all of his antennae. And we will close things up for this episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. So we will be back. Number 18, and we promise this is actually Season 18, Event 18. There is no secret Clotheslines and Headlines.
We're wrap up the 18th edition of Placement Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines, a.k.a. the Peyton Manning edition. Shout out to the sheriff. And, guys, it's been a fun show. It's been a really great show. And hold on. Shit, I've got to start over. Hey, guys, I want to apologize for cussing, but we're doing this show for George, so we got to do it right. Nothing on the Adele?
I got it. Yeah. I got it.
Okay, I was going to say hello.
Yeah. I'm going to kick up my I was just jumping out of the stadium as my Lady Gaga impression. Or I could have gone one deeper and just said my mic cut out like my man Hetfield.
Oh, Grammys. But yeah, we're not here to talk about music and Beyonce's twins being robbed of a Grammy. We're here to wrap up this week's edition of Clotheslines and Headlines. We had a great show talking all things in the world of pro wrestling, WWE financials, the Elimination Chamber, the state of Ring of Honor, Chikara. Guys, any final thoughts as we close this week's edition of the fastest 90 minutes or 2 hours or 3 hours, depending on how long Brad talked in wrestling podcasts?
Glendy, you're always a good one to wrap these things up, maybe with a little message, a pithy phrase. I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, you know, it makes me feel good when we hit the podcast running. It makes me feel alive.
And on that note. what do you got for the people, Steve?
Well, we have a much delayed live watch that was in the can for a couple months, and I believe it's going to be released within the next day or two of this being released. And it is happening. Glenn and I are on it together.
Ooh,
it
boy.
Is, yeah. We apologize. Like, man, Nate, if you thought your swearing was bad, the content of this is NC-17 for sure. There is some wrestling in an apartment, and it is awkward. And kind of playing up a little bit more on my Instagram account, Steve Willie, PTBN. You can always hit me up on Messenger. I'm not hard to find. And just kind of staying away from the Twitter and the Facebook because it's kind of swirling down the drain right now. They drained the swamp, but they took everything else with it.
No, I'm still stuck on the apartment wrestling. Brings me back to a group I used to belong to on Yahoo. I mean nothing.
Nothing on there is safe for work.
Yeah, there's not one.
Glenn, you got anything popping off on these here internet streets?
Sure. If anyone would like to reach me, I am on Twitter and Tumblr at Glenny Bunn. I have the Wednesday Walk Around the Web, posting 9 a.m. sharp Wednesday morning every Wednesday at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a link roundup of things that I find interesting or amusing or profound in some way, or just things I'd like to share. I am also the host of the Glenn Butler podcast Our Spectacular on the PlaceToBeNation pop feed. We did an episode about the latest season of Sherlock recently. We've done, oh God, like 15 episodes about Star Trek. A whole lot of things in there if you want to look in the archives. Coming up next week, we are doing our Oscar preview for the Best Original Score and Best Original Song category, because those are the ones that everyone's buzzing about, right? So my brother and I are going to break down all of the music nominated and some of the things that we liked a whole lot more than any of the nominees. That is what they call a teaser.
So if Evelina doesn't win an Oscar, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Oh, I'll riot.
You can find me on Twitter, N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Got a couple podcasts popping off this week. The Kings of Sport, Marcus Vanderberg, and myself. We are beginning our Road to WrestleMania series, and I believe our first guest is going to be Braden Harrington from the Live Audio Wrestling family. So that should be interesting. You can check that out, the Kings of Sport. I've got Always Forward, the Luke Cage podcast that I co-host with Efren Guzman. We are on our final run of shows. We are on episodes 11, 12, and 13. We're speaking to Joelle Monique and Alexis Torres from AfterBuzz TV, as well as Alex Greenfield, former WWE writer. So if you know Brother Greeny or you've listened to him on other shows, you know that is going to be something you don't want to miss. So check out Always Forward. Wherever you get your podcast from. And let's see. I got Pipe Bomb Radio. And that's it.
Oh, you're missing the best one.
The best one.
Sometimes you keep it 100, but at other times you keep it 2,000.
Yes. I try to block those memories out of my mind because there is a new Keep It 2,000 dropping this week where Brian Mann and I look at all of the WCW Monday Nitros from the year 2000. And on this week's episode, we spend probably about 15 minutes talking about why in the hell Ahmed Johnson is walking backstage with a gallon of milk. Because that actually happened on a WCW Monday Nitro in the year 2000.
That's pretty disturbing considering the significance that milk has taken on for some people now.
He was trying to warn us.
Oh, if only we'd listened.
Why didn't we listen to Ahmed Johnson? I mean, Big T. Big T. See, now you're bringing back those bad memories. But that's coming up this weekend. And then in 2 weeks, you can catch all of us back here again for another episode of Clotheslines and Headlines, where we will be getting the straight shot, the straight scoop from one Mr. Kevin Kelly.
And we might even be joined by our own resident Emelina, JT Rosero. So that could be maybe in a new gimmick. Maybe I'll have a new first name.
Unless he takes that job in D.C.
No.
Well, he'll have to take this hosting seat from my cold, dead hands.
Hey, you always be our La Luchadora, Glenn Butler.
Oh, it's the words I always wanted to hear, Nate.
Hell, in that case, let's quit while we're ahead and say goodbye to the people for another week or 2 weeks. I believe a fortnight is what they would call it overseas across the pond. So check us back here in 2 weeks for episode 19 of Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines. And we'll have some fun. So again, thanks for listening to the show and downloading. And we'll do this again in a couple weeks, fellas.
All right. Always fun. Thanks very much for listening.